Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, made in France since 1925. The first and finest enameled cast iron cookware and a favorite for generations. For more information, visit lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week, we're looking at the way labels shape our perspectives on food.
I know you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but is it acceptable to judge a wine by its label?
There are some labels that I'd say are so bad they're good.
As long as your paperwork's in good shape, you'll get a grass-fed label.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's Meat plus sign THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good evening and welcome to
Foment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived everywhere, great iTunes. I mean, wait, was that supposed to be? great podcasts are found, and especially right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Yay, all right. And that's one to grow on.
Yay.
It has been a really fun few weeks. We had the congratulations to all the New York City marathoners who just ran. It was always so freaking inspiring. I cry a couple times every day that happens. Fifth Hammer is one block away from basically the mid marker. Mm-hmm. And we had a giant sign making party, and people track their runners, then walk down the block to cheer them on and bring it back. And it was pretty special. Always special.
Yeah, there are so many people that come out to like Brooklyn, which is where the race starts, but Queens is where it gets real lonely and
starts
sad. It starts on the bridge.
That's fair.
And yeah, so but like Queens is where people get tired, and it's where people get real lonely. So like, it's a good place to go
to amp them up.
Yeah.
Well, they did it. Congratulations to everyone on that. We're getting into the holidays, and Mary and I have been having fun with the fun tank at Fifth Hammer, and I'm particularly excited about one that we made kind of in honor of Thanksgiving and kind of holiday spirit, and it's called Cran Orangutan, and it is Cran.
Oh my god.
It's Cran.
You monster.
It's a sour beer with cranberry, blood orange, and a touch of star anise, and it's crushing, man. It's really great. I'm really excited about it, but we didn't put it on tap yet, so.
Stay tuned.
I just tasted from the bright tank, and I'm excited. It's packaged and it's ready to go. Today, you've heard us talk about this stuff before.
Oh yeah.
I don't even know where to begin to talk about. Well, so today we're talking about natto. And
not snatto,
and I say not for me natto because I have yet to find what I love, except I always give it a new chance. And today our guest is from Nurture, NYTURE, NY being New York,
NYTURE,
and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So, I mean, not everybody listens to all our shows, obviously, not even me. But what is natto?
Wait, did you actually announce Anne's name?
No.
At the full name?
Yeah.
Anne, would you like to introduce yourself?
No, because I forgot your last name.
Anne, I'm Anne Yonatani.
Yonatani, there we go.
And now we know how to pronounce it, too.
Yes.
Yeah, so tell us, what got you into fermentation?
Oh, well, that's easy. I'm a microbiologist. So I've spent many years, decades, in fact, fermenting, but But the transition to becoming a food maker was a rather unexpected calling.
And how long ago was that?
It happened a little bit gradually, but over the last few years, yeah. Mm-hmm. I came into this really as a scientist, mm-hmm. With just an interest in fermented foods. Also, I've always been passionate about food, and with a soft spot particularly for the complex flavors of mm-hmm. fermented foods in general. But as a Japanese American, I grew up eating natto. So this was a food that I recognized was pretty much unavailable in this country. I would eat it when I would travel to Japan, but it was sort of missing from the palate here. At first I just went to Japan and learned how to make it just out of personal curiosity. So I could make it at home. Mm-hmm.
Where did you go to Japan to learn how to make it?
I found probably the oldest still working natto factory in Tokyo. It's a fifth generation business, so almost 200 years old, but still producing natto in the very metropolitan center of Tokyo.
Is natto a staple in Japanese?
It literally is, yes. Unlike miso and soy sauce and koji these days, mm-hmm. sake, you know, many other traditional Japanese ferments that are well known, even common here these days, natto is just as much a staple food in Japan, but one that most people here in this country have not yet heard of.
Mm-hmm. So what is it?
What is it? Well, it's pretty simple. Natto is whole soybeans that are fermented with a probiotic species of bacteria called Bacillus subtilis.
What?
Yeah, what is that exactly? What is that
Bacillus
bacteria?
What is Bacillus subtilis? Well, Bacillus subtilis is a common, ubiquitous environmental bacteria, benign, but actually probiotic bacteria that's found everywhere on Earth, mostly dwelling in the soil, and on the plants that grow from it. Yeah.
And
it's actually also the same species that's a natural source of the antibiotic bacitracin.
Oh. So that's what... So the bacillus produce antibiotic.
Bacillus subtilis the natural producer of the antibiotic. Yeah, bacitracin.
Is it
was
used?
Discovered here in New York City.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Is that the bacteria that's predominantly on the outside of soybeans?
No, it is not naturally found on soybeans.
Is it used to ferment anything else besides natto?
There are very few foods that really took off being fermented by Bacillus, but across Asia, many countries throughout Southeastern Asia do have Bacillus subtilis fermented soy-based foods.
Okay.
Yes. And to some extent in India and the Himalayas, so northern India, and the only other place is Africa.
Interesting.
There are Bacillus subtilis ferments in Africa as well.
And are those soy as well or other?
Traditionally, they were mostly based on nere seed or locust bean, as they're often called. They have many names depending on what language you're speaking in, but the most common name is Dawa Dawa in Central and Western Africa. So it's a very similar ferment, and what I understand is in Africa, locust beans are becoming increasingly in short supply. So actually a lot of makers of Dawa Dawa in Africa are switching to soybeans, which are being grown more and more everywhere. So, yeah, I think in the modern day, it turns out to be a quite similar ferment and food.
Oh, wow. That's
so. What is natto?
Yeah, so I think we're beating around the bush about why Americans don't really like natto or haven't taken to natto. So what exactly about it do you think?
So what is the texture and the flavor?
Yeah, what is it?
We just talked about the what is. What is the flavor and what is it? What is the result of the fermentation?
Yeah.
And presentation of general natto.
Well, the flavor of natto, to be honest, is I think most similar to a delicious savory washed rind cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of flavor, it's actually not something that's particularly challenging to the, you know, to the modern American palate. Also in terms of smell, it has a very negative reputation about its stinkiness, about its pungency, but really it's nothing more challenging than, you know, really artisanal European cheese, mm-hmm. which is all the rage these days. But yeah, you know, I'll be honest. The thing about natto that is actually the most challenging for newcomers is its texture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's where I fall short, and that's where I apologize to the natto people. But that texture is a kind of what's happening there? The texture is a kind of slimy, soft bean kind of thing.
They're whole beans that are sort of held together by a gooey, slimy, I'll admit, kind of thick sauce.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what that is actually a biofilm. Secreted by the probiotic bacteria during the fermentation. Biofilms are something that many microbes, not just bacteria, but fungi and many different types of microbes produce.
It's like a kombucha SCOBY is a biofilm, isn't it?
It is, actually, yes. It is a biofilm that contains, you know, multiple different species within it.
Mm-hmm.
But biofilms in general are produced by bacteria to sort of house a community of microbes, whether it be just them or a more diverse mixed community. It's a protective environment. It's a semi-liquid environment through which they can move because they don't have arms and legs.
Right.
They can talk to each other through this medium. It has many, many biological functions. And we're used to seeing this kind of thing in nature out in the world all the time. But we're not accustomed to seeing it in our food. But Bacillus subtilis happens to be a prolific producer of biofilm.
Mm-hmm.
And as we just said, there are few foods that are fermented with this particular species.
But the few foods that you picked up on were both bean-based, right?
Yes.
So it tends to like the protein of bean?
It does, yes.
Quick technical difficulties with Mary's mic here. She's been holding her mic completely fell off the stand, and she's manually holding it. It's very cool. I am fascinated by the texture and look of it. And I do love the smell and I do love the taste, but I do have a textural challenge. It is a textural challenge,
or
at least in the past. I mean,
in Asia in general, sort of gooey, slimy, very organic textures like that are much more common
mm-hmm.
with many foods, you know, like seaweeds or many seafoods mm-hmm. like squid or uni have that kind of sea urchin that was. Have a similar kind of gooey, mucousy texture. Raw egg yolk, which is often eaten with natto in Japan. Bubble tea, you know, the taro bubble tea.
These are all things that I love.
Yeah, so a lot of people are quite familiar with that same mm-hmm. class of textures in other contexts already. But for some reason in natto, it seems to polarize some.
That's all true. Traditionally, is natto eaten on its own? Is it a side component to a greater meal?
No, it is generally never eaten straight.
Okay. And what are great uses for natto? And what are the Are there different flavors? I noticed you have two different jars in front of us that may
be
two different types.
I brought a jar of our traditional style original natto, our first product, as well as a jar of our black natto, which is much more unusual. It's same natto made simply from black soybeans. But we have a couple of other varieties too. We have a turmeric natto as well as an organic natto. I didn't bring those today.
That's okay. I like talking about why you choose the different flavors for its base, or what it dances with, and what other foods you eat it with.
Right. So, I'll start with the first question about, you know, what is the basic way to eat it? Mm-hmm. So in Japan, people generally eat it one way, and they usually eat it for breakfast. It's considered like a power breakfast food, typically. And you would eat a portion of natto with a bowl of hot white rice, perhaps with a raw egg yolk mixed in, maybe some scallions, a little soy sauce, mm-hmm. perhaps some mustard.
Mustard.
And mix it all up. And that is your go-to no cooking, aside from the rice.
So I haven't heard.
Power breakfast.
I haven't heard that before. Or mustard. When you say mustard, what kind of mustard are you talking about?
Like a spicy hot mustard. In Japan, natto is generally packaged in these individual serving containers, and usually actually comes with a packet of like a dashi soy sauce and a small packet of spicy mustard.
Okay.
That, like, the closest equivalent here would be like a Coleman's type of English mustard, that type of flavor.
I ask because I'm Ecuadorian, and in our ceviche from Manabi, we often put actual Heinz ketchup or straight up yellow mustard in the ceviche, just a little bit for that tang. I just wonder if that crosses over anywhere. But I digress.
I think that breakfast sounds delicious. So we're going to take a brief break, and we're going to open these nattos and start tasting them. And then we'll talk about how natto is made and what else you can do with it.
Fermentabot.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, the first to pioneer colorful enameled cookware over 90 years ago. They've been a favorite for generations through the meals and memories the cookware creates and the style it expresses. My name is Kat Johnson. I'm the communications director at Heritage Radio Network. When I'm not making food radio, I'm making food, and my favorite cookware is the 8-quart marine blue Dutch oven that never leaves my stovetop. Not only because I use it constantly, but because cabinet space is at a premium in New York City kitchens. My boyfriend and I were gifted our Le Creuset by his family last Christmas, and it was the first piece of enameled cookware we'd ever owned. I've been fawning over the marine blue color, especially when I realized there were only a few left in stock. When we unwrapped the box, we were pleasantly surprised to see how big this thing was. I immediately started imagining what I could cook. Roast chicken, Texas-style chili, a leg of lamb, or my favorite, a huge batch of Marcella Hazan's bolognese. Head to lecreuset.com/HRN, that's LECREUSET.com/HRN, to see all the new products and amazing holiday gift deals. HRN listeners will get 20% off the new Le Creuset cookbook with the code HRN.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are here in the studio with our friend Anna Yonatani, and Yonatani from Nurture Natto, NYRTURE. And we have just opened up traditional natto that she's made. The company is 2 years old, Anne?
Yeah.
Yes, 2 years old. And I'm watching Mary with it. There's a gelatinous gummy stuff coming from her mouth as she eats it. It does have a smell like a very nice wash rind.
The whole studio
stinky
smells
cheese.
Like it.
It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it does also...
I get just like a lot of umami.
I get
like
umami.
Kind of almost a little bit of soy, you know, that those kind of aromas too.
There, I can geek out for a second here. That biofilm I described earlier is composed almost entirely of chains of glutamate amino acid molecules. And you guys know what glutamate means. Glutamate equals pure umami. So as your saliva breaks down that biofilm, you're just releasing explosions of chemically pure umami taste. Yeah.
I like it.
Oh, wow.
And it is explosive with umami taste, that is for sure.
So, yeah, let's talk about more about natto before we get into, when we went on break, you were talking about the health benefits, and when I was looking at your website earlier, there are a lot of health benefits besides the probiotics.
Yes. So, you know, a lot of people who've tried our natto have apprehensions, you know, as you do, you know, about
She's
the texture. or have heard scary things on the internet, you know, because everything on the internet is true. And but they come to it because they've also heard about the absolutely amazing health benefits of this food. So there are three main ones. Main ones, let me say again. Number one is probiotic. Bacillus subtilis is a probiotic species of bacteria, a healthy gut member of the microbiome. And it's one of the only foods in the world that's fermented with this species. Mm-hmm. It's also the richest source of vitamin K2. This is a vitamin, a micronutrient that's produced by the bacteria during fermentation. And this is a vitamin that's gaining more and more attention in the medical and scientific fields because it's very important for both bone health and cardiovascular health. And most Americans are deficient in this micronutrient.
Where else is K2 prevalent?
The next best sources are other fermented foods because it is primarily produced by bacteria. Mm-hmm. Historically, probably by healthy microbiome gut bacteria, but as our modern diet has degraded the microbiome in general, we need to rely more and more on food sources for this vitamin. So the next best sources are cheeses, some fermented meat products, and some meats themselves that are from fattier tissues in certain animals because it's a fat-soluble vitamin. But natto has 10 to 100 times more than any of those other food sources. I mean, just by far, natto is the go-to food source for vitamin K2, full stop.
So that was two?
That was two.
That was two.
We're only at number
two. We're only at number two.
Number three is the fermentation, and the bacteria also produce an enzyme called nattokinase, which is a natural blood thinner.
Ah.
A blood thinning enzyme that... you go into Whole Foods, there are four different brands of nattokinase pills on the shelf that millions of people apparently take instead of eating the food that it comes from.
Which would be interesting.
So three different scientifically backed health benefits that are in one food.
And it has fiber. I assume it has fiber as well.
Oh, it's got tons of fiber. I mean,
protein.
9 to 10 grams of protein per serving. I mean, it's just basic nutritional profile is amazing as well. It's a clean food. There are only two ingredients, GMO-free organic soybeans and probiotic bacteria. Zero salt, zero sugar, zero additives whatsoever. So, you know, there's so many reasons, compelling reasons to eat this food for your health, that a lot of people give it a chance and actually become hooked.
Yeah. I do like it. I am eating it right now, and I do very much like it.
Yay!
Success! found Nato. I'm ready now. I'm an adult. Look at me, Mary. I can walk.
Another convert. I mean,
but
like mac and cheese is kind of slimy too, and you love mac and cheese, true. Right? It's not that different. I mean, mm-hmm. it has that kind of cheese, you know, that kind of
gooiness.
I mean, some cheeses have are gooey like that, right? Like a good like a soft brie cheese.
Well, this has this has like a little bit of crystal kind of.
Yeah, that some really nice cheeses developed.
Yeah, for sure, and it has that. And it is very rich. There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And so, what portion size do people eat it with? But you put it on the rice. Is it considered kind of a flavoring thing, or
a typical portion size would be like 3 tablespoons.
Okay.
Yeah, mixed into a small bowl of rice.
But that's not crazy. I mean, that's not 3 tablespoons. That makes sense to me based on the richness of flavor going on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, at the fermentation.
That sounds so good to me. That's all I can think of.
Yeah.
That breakfast.
I know, it does sound really good.
I'd make it with brown rice.
Not the raw egg.
Follow my life on craft for an image of this soon. Her breakfast images.
At the fermentation festival, they were having us try the black soybean natto with yogurt and blueberries.
Yeah. So you guys want to try the black? So the black natto has quite a different flavor profile, just because the black soybeans taste different, you know, like, I don't know, like black beans different, taste different varieties. Yeah, of beans or of grapes or of apples have a different flavor. So the black soybeans have a sort of smoky, almost chocolatey coffee taste to them, and that comes through in the natto. So, and it also is a less pungent, less sticky and slimy product. So we often call the black natto our gateway natto. and because it's milder, it can sort of be served either sweet or savory. So there are many more culinary possibilities, I think, with the black natto.
That's so interesting. So
let's try it straight.
This is the sound of little spoons of natto being passed around the studio here.
Of natto anticipation.
Does anybody in Japan eat natto with like sweet foods?
It's very rare. I mean, you know, these days people are trying to mix things up and do more creative Western influenced things with food, but no, in general the Japanese kind of stick to, you know, that breakfast style dish that I described, and don't stray too far from that.
Yeah, I think I like the original bot better. Mm-hmm. Right, because it's more flavorful, milder, but this is good. It's just
this is like something I can convince probably my friends to eat.
Sure.
Maybe.
Cousin? I think this would be good on oatmeal.
Gateway. It has a little bit more of like a bitterness, right? Yeah. Like of a dark chocolate or a coffee. So if you add some sweetener to it, again, like this is not how you would eat natto normally.
Right.
If you mixed in some honey or some maple syrup,
I could see it with oatmeal,
sweetened it up and then added other flavors to it, it kind of can become like a dark chocolate sort of flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like a coffee-esque kind of flavor to it. Very interesting.
Oatmeal or like on a waffle, like a savory waffle. That's what I want natto on. Or grits, man. Natto and grits.
Natto and grits. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
How much natto do you make at a time? What is the shelf life on natto? And what's the time from inoculation to completion?
Natto is a pretty fast ferment. That's, you know, partly because in the modern day, we inoculate with a culture. And we start with a pretty high concentration of it. So it's already, you know, pretty full of bacteria, you know, from the beginning.
Ready to get the job done.
Ready to get the job done. So the fermentation really only takes one day.
Okay.
But then sort of like a cheese again, like it takes a few more days of aging after that in the cold for it to really develop the right flavor profile as well as the texture.
So in the cold. Yeah, what temperature does
the refrigeration
does it work
temperature
best?
Oh, the fermentation is done at hot temperatures, above 100 degrees.
Okay.
Yeah, but that part is just one day long.
One day long at 100.
And then it ages at refrigeration level temperatures for a few more days after that.
So for a lot of pickling, you know, you make sure that your vegetables are underneath the surface layer. What are the concerns when making natto? Are there concerns for outside spoilage? Anything else? Or because the inoculation is so strong, it's going to win?
That's part of the reason for starting with a really concentrated inoculum, so that the food is immediately protected by this one benign species. And that's a pretty strong barrier. Also, the production of this biofilm, part of the function of the biofilm is to protect the interior population and to keep out other outsiders, unfriendly outsiders. So so there are a lot of biological mechanisms in place that help us keep the food protected. Unlike most other ferments, lactobacillus-based ferments, even cerevisiae yeast-based ferments, most other ferments in the West are very acidic in nature, and acid pH also provides an additional barrier of protection.
Right. But here, that doesn't
but natto is not acidic at all. In fact, it's alkaline.
That makes sense.
It's an alkaline fermentation.
What, like, how high in pH does it get?
Not much above 8.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not extremely alkaline. But that's part of the flavor, yeah. I think, also. The sort of weird, unfamiliar flavor, maybe, the aftertaste, is the taste of alkalinity, which, again, is very unfamiliar and rare in Western cuisine. Actually, in cuisine in general. There are few alkaline foods in the world. But this is one of them.
It totally makes sense with what was just tasted.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
How your tongue feels?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coated.
Yeah. What else? How else do you recommend that people eat? How, or, you know, what do your customers eat? What are, like, some American ways that people have adapted?
Yeah. That's part of our. We put a lot of energy into giving people alternative ideas for how to eat it. And as a general rule of thumb, I use the cheese analogy. I tell people it's like a vegan version of a strong, stinky cheese. And so if you think of it like a cheese, you can just use it like a cheese and throw it on pretty much anything that you might throw cheese on, which is about a million things, right? So you can eat it, as you were saying, with grits instead of rice, with pasta, with polenta, with quinoa, with mashed potatoes, with basically any other kind of starch base. You can put it in soup. You can mix it into a dip, which basically hides the texture issue. Yeah. like if you mix natto into hummus or guacamole, that biofilm kind of disappears. It just mixes in with the medium, and you can eat it.
Just the richness of flavor. You have it as a flavor component.
Yeah, natto tacos.
Taco. It's great with Mexican food and Middle Eastern food, Indian food. So I recommend mixing it with other foods that you like, whatever that may be, that have strong flavors in themselves, and just to add this in as one more component. So, it complements the flavor.
So without a low acidity for protection, but just the biofilm as protection and the higher alkalinity, what is the typical shelf life of a natto, or do you have a recommendation on your product?
Well, our natto is quite unique because it's packaged in glass jars, sealed glass jars. It's the only natto in the world packaged this way.
Oh. What is the traditional packaging for it?
The traditional pack... Because of that, our natto is good for months in the fridge. Traditionally, or not traditionally, but currently, in Japan, in Asia, natto is produced in single-serving styrofoam clamshell containers, mm-hmm. Which are not sealed to the environment.
Right.
So thus, they have an extremely short shelf life. They're only good for about a week in the fridge. So all of the natto that's imported from Asia is frozen before export, you know, because they can't afford to lose the days in transit time.
Right.
And that's important because, I mean, freezing and thawing changes the flavor and texture of any food, often in a negative way. But it also damages most of the health benefits of that food as well. So if people are eating natto because they're really interested in maximizing the health benefits, frozen imported natto is just a shadow of what the fresh mm-hmm. product is. You know, all of the science that has shown all these health benefits has been done using fresh product, mostly in Japan, where it's never frozen. So an imported product is really a different thing.
Yeah. And then where do you sell your natto?
Yeah, where can we find it?
We're available in many stores around New York City. Since we're located here, that's where we've started to grow our retail business primarily. But we're also available in 6 other states. And, you know, that number is growing every week.
That's awesome. Great.
So, we're available in a lot of stores, but half of our business is also just direct to customer
sales. That's
what
I was going to say. Online. People can order online.
Cool. Yes, at nurture.com.
And that's NYRTURE.
That's right. Yes, thank you. A lot of customers just come to us directly. Many of them are high volume customers, you know, who'll buy like a case of 12 jars at a time. So we ship across the country. Yeah.
Cool.
Everywhere in the U.S.
And you're based right here in New York City. You started here in New York City.
Yep.
You started in Long Island City.
We started in Queens mm-hmm. in Long Island City in the Organic Food Incubator, mm-hmm. Which has since moved to New Jersey. And now we have our own dedicated space in East Williamsburg.
Very cool. Oh. That's close. I would like to visit.
Absolutely. Come over anytime. Seriously. We're neighbors.
That's true. It's true. I hope that you'll consider joining us for the New York City Fermentation Festival again this year.
Oh, totally.
The last years, and it's always a star of the show.
It's
because
it's been a blast.
It's such a visually intriguing ferment.
And it's not as common, so a lot of people haven't, you know, they mm-hmm. haven't heard or seen it or tasted it.
Yeah,
so,
we get great feedback at the Fermentation Fest because people are interested, intrigued, mm-hmm. you know. Even some who aren't, you know, don't turn out to be fans are like, oh, I've checked it off my bucket list.
Yep.
So you, these are the two that you have all the time. Are you constantly doing other flavors?
We have 4 products always in production. Yeah.
And the other one's turmeric?
Sorry, I didn't bring the turmeric one. Okay. Yeah.
And what's the other That's one? The turmeric and the...
And then there's a certified organic version of mm-hmm. the traditional one.
Have you played with other flavors too? That
yeah, a little bit. We've played with other sort of functional herbal add-ins. Moringa is one that we're
really?
Playing with
cool.
little bit.
Yep.
That's actually really tasty with the black natto.
That sounds like it would be.
Yeah,
the
combined with the black, it kind of like produces a sort of green vegetable taste actually mm-hmm. like a spinachy kale flavor. So that's one we're playing with, but we're always experimenting.
Is it easy to get that culture as a home fermenter?
I believe that there is one source for you know home use size aliquots of Bacillus subtilis available from Cultures for Health.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of home fermenters go there to get it.
Well, if anybody out there tries it, please let us know your results. We're curious of your thoughts.
And if you would like to, if you haven't, if you're curious about natto and would like to try it for yourself, you can go to nyrture.com to learn more and order your own.
Yeah. There's also some great
photos. Or look
photos.
At her Instagram, which is nurture, N-Y-R-T-U-R-E, for lots of cool pictures of ways to eat it and other info about natto and our company.
That's right. And thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Fermat About
Thank you.
Such a pleasure having you in the studio.
It's
I can't wait to visit your studio.
Yeah. Cheers.
Thanks.
Fermat About It.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.